Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And it is Sunday, January 29th, 2017. So tonight, we're talking about vaccines, specifically the MMR. We may not know this, but there has been an upsurge in MMR cases. Yes, sirree, Bob. So the question is, what can be done? Now, the way I know about this, of course, is I got my mail from Medscape. Mm-hmm. So it says, mum cases spike in 2016. Total is highest in a decade. Wow. That sounds pretty outrageous. And so mum cases nationally hit 249 just in the last month. Four times normal levels, according to the morbidity, that means harm, and mortality, that means death, weekly report. The recent outbreaks have pushed the nation's 2016 total to 3,832 preliminary cases. Well, what does preliminary mean? Preliminary means not confirmed. The largest number of cases in 10 years and three times last year's total of 1,000. So we have a doctor from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Division of Viral Diseases, and he says the high monthly numbers follow the pattern in a high incidence year, but they may also reflect that states are trying to get their year-end numbers in. But let's just say the numbers are accurate. As of November 5th, 45 states and Washington, D.C. had reported mumps cases this year. Six states have reported more than 100 cases, according to CDC. Arkansas, that's one state, has the highest total by far at 1,305 cases this year, which was twice Iowa's 645, the next highest state. So we seem to have some clustering of cases. Now, according to the Arkansas Department of Health website, the department is currently responding to an active outbreak of mumps in the northwest part of the state. Kids with vaccine exemptions in Arkansas schools where there have been infections are required to stay home. Because the kids are not vaccinated, and they have to stay home from school for 26 days unless they get the vaccines. Arkansas cases are mostly centered in grade schools, high schools, but nationally the cases primarily have been spread among the clusters of students at universities. Mumps virus is spread through saliva and mucus by coughing, sneezing, kissing, or other direct contact. So you need direct contact. New York is experiencing an outbreak at the State University of New York New Paltz campus. On December 9th, the New York State Department of Health reported 63 confirmed or probable cases associated with the SUNY New Paltz location since October, and more are being investigated. Now, wait, how do you lump confirmed with probable? So we've got a little bit of a padding of the numbers here, but that's okay. We're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. And we're going to deduce that it's been the same type of reporting over time. All right. The New York State Department of Health, together with the Ulster County Department of Health, held a vaccination clinic at the university. One dose of the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine is considered 78% effective. Remember that number. In preventing mumps, and two doses are 88% effective, according to the CDC. The New York State Department of Health recommends that students get a third dose of the MMR vaccine and is providing it for free. Medscape Medical News previously reported that the third dose may be beneficial in outbreaks, and then again, it may not. There is increasing evidence that a third dose of MMR vaccine will help raise immunity among the students who have not yet been exposed and help prevent the further spread of mumps on the campus. New York State Health Commissioner Howard Zucker said in a university news release, "We're also urging students to wash their hands regularly, avoid contact with people who may be sick, and immediately notify their healthcare provider if they suspect they are sick. Students who are ill should stay home from classes and social events." Now, wait a minute. If hand washing can prevent something, then that means that the person can catch this something from, well, dirty objects. So let's see what's going on here. Wash their hands regularly. I'm not sure what regularly means, but let's just say more frequently than what they are. CDC says adults born before 1957 are considered immune to mumps. That sounds very unscientific to me. After one vaccination, but children should get two doses, and adults born in 57 or later should have a second dose if they are in a college or university, work in a healthcare facility, or plan to travel internationally. Sounds like just about everybody. So Dr. Patel said the CDC is working with the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, that's a panel of U.S. health experts, who meet three times a year to establish vaccination guidance, to gather and analyze data on whether a third MMR dose should be recommended and for whom. The CDC is also working with public health experts on the epidemiology of mumps and how waning immunity contributes to these outbreaks. So does a lack of immunity contribute to outbreaks? They don't know. They're going to study that. It's important to remember that two doses of MMR can reduce your risk of getting mumps and reduce your risk of severe mumps and also reduce the risk of transmitting to others. Before the U.S. mumps vaccination program started in 1967, the CDC received reports of 186,000 cases each year. Okay. So, it seems to me I have some questions here. Like, well, how many mumps outbreaks are there, and when did these mumps outbreaks occur? Well, let's take a look. If we check out the CDC, they have cases of mumps in the United States by year. So, let's start with 2010. 2010, there were 2,500 cases. In 2011, there were 500 cases. In 2012, there were 200 cases. In 2013, there were 300 cases. 2014, 1,100. 2015, 1,200. 2016, a whopping 5,200 cases. I think we can say we had a spike in 2016. Well, if vaccines are indeed effective against this disease, then we should see, and if vaccine controls outbreaks, we should notice that when the cases go up, the vaccination rate goes down, and vice versa. So let's take a look at the vaccination rate. And so what better person to ask than, let's see, who's giving us this information? The United States Bureau of Statistics. Okay. So according to the Bureau of Statistics, the rate of vaccination has not budged since 2010. It's been right up there somewhere close to 90%. So the vaccination rate took a slight dip in 2012, but recovered and remained strong for 2015, 2014, 2013. This in no way matches up with the statistics. And so we can safely say that there is no relationship between vaccination and the outbreaks as we are experiencing them. In other words, If the number of outbreaks grows and shrinks every year while the vaccination rate remains stable, then there's absolutely no evidence that increasing vaccinations even to 5 per person would in any way affect the outbreaks. So what we see here is in 1992, vaccination rates basically reached around 90% for the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and stayed at that rate through 2015. So we only had a dip in 1998. So let's go see if... Okay, we only go back to 2000. So even though the vaccination rate stayed steady from 2000 to 2016, no change in vaccination rate, the amount of measles went from basically 200 per year in 2000, stayed 200 per year for 6 years. In 2006, it shot up to 6,500. Then it fell back down to 600 people, down to 300 people. This is 2007-08, even though the vaccination rate stayed the same. So despite a steady vaccination rate, the outbreaks varied widely from as low as 100 to as high as 6,500 from year to year. So if we're going to call 6,500 cases an alarming outbreak, and why not? Let's call it that. And then what that means is we go from very low levels to alarming outbreaks, even though the vaccination level stays steady. So in my mind, this establishes no relationship whatever between vaccination and cases. Well, the next question is, how deadly is mumps anyway? There have been no deaths from mumps in any of these outbreaks. So at least from 2006 forward, there have been no deaths from mumps. This is not a deadly disease. Okay, we've established that. The next thing we want to establish, so we realize that vaccines have nothing to do with whether or not people get mumps because the amount of mumps goes up and down drastically without respect to vaccination rates. Well, maybe we should take a look at an outbreak and see what's up. So in 2013, there was a large United States mumps outbreak, and people who had gotten 2 doses of the MMR and were in 9th to 12th grade, these happened to be Orthodox Jewish boys attending all-male yeshivas, which is a private traditional Jewish school. So I don't think the religion is important here, but what is important is these boys were under direct supervision, number one, and number two, were highly vaccinated. So you're trying to understand the mumps transmission dynamics in this well-vaccinated population. To get this precisely understood, you need to get that these boys, when they entered school, none of them had mumps. None of these boys had mumps. Yet, there was an outbreak, and they were vaccinated. This is in Brooklyn, New York. Reported mumps cases between September 1st and March 30th in 2010. September 1st, 09 to March 30th, 2010. And they assessed the vaccination coverage in this school, and they found that the vaccine percentage was, and they're not going to tell us, but it was very high. Okay, so the big deal here is the average attack rate was 14.5% despite 2 dose measles, mumps, rubella vaccine in 90 to 100% of students. So there was a vaccine rate. 90 to 100% were vaccinated, but 13% got mumps anyway. And these students were basically averaged 7 hours face-to-face daily with 1 to 4 student partners. Not a lot of opportunity for spread there. Average daily density was 6.6 students per 100 square feet. Number of hours spent face-to-face with the study partner, number of partners per day showed no significant positive associations with classroom mumps attack rates. So, in other words, how many hours they spent in the class, how many hours they spent in contact with other students did not positively correlate with their chances of getting mumps. So increased exposure to other students who had mumps did not increase your chances of getting mumps. Again, other evidence that not person-to-person spread. The outbreak was characterized by environmental factors such as densely populated environment, prolonged face-to-face contact, mixing among infected students. However, these features were present in all included schools. And so with all these features, there didn't seem to be any variation in outbreak. And they say, nonetheless, mumps transmission does require close contact, and these environmental factors may have overwhelmed vaccine-mediated protection, increasing the likelihood of vaccine failure among yeshiva students. So yeshiva students were spending too much time with, well, other yeshiva students. And because of this, it overwhelmed the vaccine protection. That sounds pretty outrageous. It just, you know, sounds really like a pretty weak excuse. So the other question that one has to ask here is there any other way to collect, get mumps aside from person-to-person contact? And for this, we consult the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. And they have something called the Traveler's Health Advisory. And here they talk about mumps. It says, yes, mumps causes infection. It's a enveloped negative strand RNA virus, which has protein in it, transmitted by, get this, respiratory droplets. Okay. Now, in our yeshiva example, increasing exposure to respiratory droplets did not increase the probability of transmission. Saliva, again, close contact did not increase transmission. Or, get this, contact with contaminated fomites. Contaminated fomites. So, well, duh, what is a fomite? A fomite is an object or materials that are likely to carry infection, such as clothes, utensils. We think of utensils as a spoon or fork, and furniture. Furniture as in doorknobs or, well, toilet seats. You stop and think about it. In a school, if a doorknob is infected, many of the students are going to touch that particular doorknob. And that would explain why the duration of exposure to infected or potentially infected people would not be associated with increased infection. So then we have a situation where it appears there may be an environmental issue here. But that's not all. We have some more clues. So let's take a look at what the CDC has to say about mumps. I mean, how bad is this, right? So the CDC reports on complications, and it says there have been no mumps-related deaths reported in the United States during recent mumps outbreaks. In other words, this is not a deadly disease. Vaccination is the best way to prevent mumps. So if we look at our yeshiva example, this does not appear to be the case. Not at all. and two doses of mumps vaccine are 88% effective, that would be 66% to 95%, we'll call it 66%, effective at preventing the disease. That is not very effective at all. That's a pretty poor effectiveness rate. Okay, so they say here the vaccine is not that effective, but it's the best way to prevent mumps. Now, we have this fomite avenue of spread that kind of begs the question. But let's take another look at this vaccine and this practice of vaccination as it pertains to mumps and what is recommended. So whenever you have a drug, the FDA always has recommendations on how a drug should be used, and they approve that drug with these recommendations in force. So let's see what the deal is here. The CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, says on its website, who should get the MMR vaccine? And they say, by the way, the MMR vaccine is approved. It's only licensed for use in children who are 12 months to 12 years of age. That's it. So if you're under 12 months, the use is not licensed. And if you're over 12 years, it's not licensed. So then what do they say? They go on to then say, students at post-high school educational institutions, that's over 18 years of age, need two doses of MMR vaccine separated by at least 28 days. So they're recommending the use of a vaccine for a purpose in a population for which it's not approved. The government is actually considering penalizing doctors who use drugs this way, yet the government on its own website is advocating the use of the MMR vaccine in a population for which it is not approved. Okay. It's more interesting. International travelers. Infants aged 6 through 11 months of age should receive one dose of MMR vaccine. Infants who get one dose of MMR vaccine before their first birthday should get two more doses. One at 12 through 15, another dose separated by 28 days. So they now again recommend the use of the vaccine in a population, infants under 12 months of age, for which the vaccine is not approved. By the way, the FDA says it should not be used in children under 12 months of age because maternal antibodies interfere with the effectiveness of the vaccine. So MMR vaccine is given later than other childhood vaccines because antibodies transferred from the mother to the baby provide protection from disease and make the MMR vaccine less effective until you're 1 year of age. So we want it given to infants 6 through 11 months of age, even though it's not effective.
Right.
Children 12 months of age and older should receive two doses, separated by 28 days. Teenagers, that means people who are a teen, that would be 13, that's older than the age for which the vaccine has been licensed. So teenagers and adults who do not have evidence of immunity against measles should get two doses of MMR, that's measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, separated by 28 days. Again, a recommendation that the vaccine be used in a situation for which the vaccine has not been licensed or approved. So this is getting very unscientific. Have a vaccine, we'll say measles, mumps, and rubella, the mumps vaccine. There is evidence that being vaccinated has nothing to do with getting the disease. People can get the disease even though they've been vaccinated. And fluctuations in disease level do not correspond with fluctuations in vaccination level. So, and then we have this outbreak where whether or not a child is affected has nothing to do with how much time he spends in contact with other affected students or affected individuals. And then the CDC Traveler's Advisory gives us this clue, hey, this can be spread by objects or materials. And if you're old like I am, 60 years old, you remember way back when the government said disease cannot be spread by doorknobs and toilet seats. Disease cannot be spread by furniture, basically. Now, if you're a traveler, all of a sudden, it can be spread by furniture. And so, organisms deposited on furniture, clothing, or utensils, such as doorknobs, which is a very frequent piece of furniture in schools, and one that many children touch, can spread mumps and would more than explain the sporadic outbreaks of mumps in vaccinated populations. So when you combine vaccine ineffectiveness with clustering of outbreaks, it becomes pretty straightforward. So in the medical report, they never address where the organism comes from that infects the first person. Of course, well, nowhere. This suggests that we have a case of spontaneous generation, like magic. The organism comes from nowhere. This is like superstition, disproven by science a while ago, like when they invented the microscope. So we know there's no spontaneous generation, therefore it has to come from somewhere. We know it's not person-to-person spread because the amount of time a student spends in contact with other students or the number of students has nothing to do with probability of getting infected. So the fact that person-to-person spread is not an issue here is huge. So we find then that it is spread by fomites. So that begs the question. What's the question? Why don't we just vaccinate the doorknobs? Why vaccinate the people? Just vaccinate the doorknobs. Vaccinate the toilet seats. Now, another thing to do besides vaccinating the doorknobs and toilet seats, of course, would be to just wash off the doorknobs and wash off the toilet seats. Yeah, you could use essential oil of lemon or orange, or you could just use soap and water. Wipe off the toilet seats after each use and wipe off doorknobs frequently. See, I'm burning, burning.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org. Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
If your home has hard water, then it's likely that Limescale is clogging your pipes, damaging your appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars each year. You can eliminate Limescale in the entire house with HydroCare products available at Wave Home Solutions. Easy and efficient with no maintenance, no salts, no chemicals, and no coils. And you can buy with confidence from Wave Home Solutions. Performance guaranteed. Just go to bestwater411.com. That's bestwater411.com.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on for the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. So we have to take a look of what is going on in terms of this whole mumps thing and this exposure in at these Jewish schools. So the shocker is that the mumps outbreaks seem to be classroom specific. One classroom have a 42% outbreak, another classroom have a 13% outbreak. And that there was no outbreak in the family of those affected. The outbreak was traced to a twice vaccinated 11-year-old boy who developed mumps in June of 2009 while at a camp with about 400 other boys. The virus spread within the Brooklyn and Rockland County in New York after infected campers returned home to those communities. The disease then spread to Ocean County, New Jersey, and Orange County, New Jersey, from contacts in Brooklyn. All told, the outbreak caused 3,381 confirmed and 121 probable cases, 97% of them members of the Orthodox Jewish community. Remaining 3% of cases were epidemiologically linked to those communities. Uh, So the highest proportion of cases occurred among teenagers, 13 to 17% of age, and most of those were male. So 27% of cases were in teenagers. And initial spread was among boys in the yeshivas, and later cases occurred, they did say here, among some families. The outbreak took place against the background of high vaccination rates. So 97% were vaccinated. Shocking. This was similar to 2009 coverage among the age group in New Jersey. 91% were vaccinated. So again, if we can have an outbreak with a vaccination rate of 97%, then you have to seriously question the effectiveness of this vaccine. So the vaccine is totally not effective. The reservoir, most likely fomites. And what this suggests is that the best way to control this disease really is hygiene, is to increase the cleanliness and attention to furniture, surfaces, and shared utensils and clothing. And that any effects or attempts at vaccine or vaccination are simply misguided, because with 97% vaccination rate, and one still has an outbreak in 97% vaccinated population, yet no outbreaks in other lesser vaccinated populations, then one would have to say that there's really not a good correlation between vaccination and protection from these diseases. So the best way to proceed for these highly vaccinated children is to clean or have more, have better hygiene, to clean publicly used or jointly used objects, such as toilet seats and doorknobs, instead of using using the vaccines, maybe each kid could be assigned a spray bottle disinfectant to spray the toilet seat before he uses it, spray the doorknob before he uses it. So the real deal here then is to focus on where the disease comes from, not on a philosophy or rigid philosophy, and instead really go where the data leads. The data suggests that vaccination just is not effective, especially for an illness, mumps, that's not even deadly. It makes no sense to even vaccinate against it, actually. The other issue is the whole person-to-person spread situation. Again, if one vaccinated person is able to spread this disease to another vaccinated person, which appears to be the pattern here, then the vaccines are futile. And for the medical industrial complex to suggest to its readers, the doctors, that a third vaccine is going to do anything about this is outrageous. It's just really utter nonsense. So now their solution is, okay, we have a failed strategy, vaccination, and our plan then is to use the failed strategy a third time. How about a complementary strategy? Maybe a strategy to clear up the environmental issues here, which appear to be common use areas, and getting rid of those would solve the problem. That was cleaning up these areas that are publicly used and can serve as a reservoir for these diseases. Now, I just have to say, when I was a kid, nobody got vaccinated against mumps. I never heard of anyone, not a single case, who got the mumps. Now, while you may not want to think the vaccine is causing the illness, we can certainly say that it's absolutely not preventing it. And still, we have another, the Daily Beast, an establishment type source, says, ready for more mumps? The U.S. has had at least 3 outbreaks thus far. This is in 2014, including ongoing problems in Ohio, where more than 200 cases have been identified. New York City, with many cases. New Jersey, with 8 cases diagnosed just this week. All of these outbreaks share the basics. College students who were vaccinated appropriately as kids, but nevertheless come down with aches, fever, and sufficiently swollen salivary glands. The outbreaks followed closely on the heels of similar, much larger outbreaks in the Midwest in 06 and in 2009-10 by a whopper among Orthodox Jewish teenagers in New York and New Jersey. And who can forget last year's New Jersey outbreak of a few dozen cases linked to patrons at a nightclub that considered itself one of Jersey Shore's most talked about venues? He says, what's the deal here? Mumps is supposed to be long gone, like measles and German measles and all the other pediatric infections that actually never have gone away. The mumps problem, though, is altogether different from the usual tale of anti-vaccination. Crunchy parents bent on protecting their children by making them sicker, by assuring they contract severe preventable infections, making the mumps vaccine something of the let's not talk about it problem child of vaccination campaigns. Here's the secret. The vaccine is only good, not great. Most studies place the effectiveness at around 80%. Now, they're attempting here to excuse the whole problem, but if you have 100% of people getting vaccinated and the disease is still around, then eradicating the disease cannot be done by vaccination. It absolutely can't. If the vaccine is only 80% effective, it will not prevent epidemics. You still have 20% of people who can get infected. And so it says it's good, but it's much better than the currently available vaccines to prevent influenza, which comes in at about 65% efficacy. So an ineffective flu vaccine, in my mind, does not excuse an ineffective mumps vaccine. And they say adding a third vaccination to kick it up a notch, though discussed, is not currently recommended outside of exceptional situations. Now, this was, I believe, 2014. So it's 2014, and so 2014, there's no chance of selling the concept of a third vaccine for mumps when 2 vaccines had not worked. So they are saying vaccine protection doesn't last long enough because vaccines always are victims of their own success. In the modern world, immunity is maintained 2 ways: by additional vaccination every now and then, or by exposure to a person with the actual disease. In the early days of any new vaccine, there are still lots of natural cases around, so a person vaccinated 5 or 10 years ago will likely encounter a person with honest to good real infection of interest. This is not even science. This sort of hello, oops, goodbye exposure is quite beneficial. It's not enough to clinically infect the vaccinated person, but does serve to bump its immunity another notch. So when there were both natural disease circulating and vaccine, these periodic exposures made it possible to vaccinate little kids and figure they were protected for the rest of their lives. This is total nonsense. Total nonsense. So what you're saying is the vaccine's not working, so let's do it again. But with mumps, more recently chickenpox vaccine, removing all these exposures to true disease means a person only has the immunity induced by the vaccine itself. Again, he's giving credence to the parent he just ridiculed for saying, let my kid catch it naturally. And he's saying because kids aren't catching these diseases naturally, that's why the vaccines don't work. So the vaccine-induced immunity runs out of gas after 10 to 15 years and the kids in their teens become slightly susceptible. But that's only half the equation. To develop a true infection, not only do they need to have slightly lowered immunity, but they also need to be packed tightly in the airless, sock-reeking, can-I-borrow-your-towel, later-day version of the Army barracks, the college dorm. Now, I went to college. I lived in a dorm. It was not Army barracks. It was more like a hotel. You have halls and you have rooms off the hall. And in each room, even if there's more than one person, there's a separate bedroom for each person. So this idea that college students are packed tightly into airless, sock-reeking rooms where they are sharing towels. That's not my recollection of college. Maybe it's changed a lot since then. There, with that unique congregate housing mix of population density, hurried intimacy, what is that? And perverse pride in displaying the extremes of hygiene, just about any low-grade infection has a chance to be amplified by exposure and re-exposure within a few days or hours. So on the one hand, they say there's not enough infection around to maintain immunization, and in the next breath, they say there's too much infection around, it's overcome the vaccine. More than enough to overwhelm any slightly wimped out vaccine produced immunity. In scholastic terms, sustained close contact in mom's case plus waning vaccine-induced immunity equals transmission at a secondary case. So what we're saying then is colleges are responsible for unsafe housing. In other words, overcrowded conditions for the students. So these students who are going to college for 4 years hoping to prepare for employment are actually being subjected to unsafe, unhealthy overcrowding. See, it says here, sustained close contact in mom's case plus waning vaccine-induced immunity. So the lack of immunity wouldn't be a problem if there wasn't overcrowding in colleges. And so colleges then are like, well, prisons. But even though the disease occurs among vaccinees, it typically is much less severe than that seen among those never vaccinated. For example, in the old pre-vaccine days, mumps caused non-bacterial meningitis and encephalitis, often accounting for more than a third of all such cases nationally. Plus, for boys, inflamed testicles happened in a third or more, though sterility was uncommon. For women, some older experts associated pre-puberty mumps with infertility. So since the vaccine's been around, these sorts of complications are unusual. In the New Jersey and New York outbreak among young Orthodox Jews, the rate of testicular infection was 7%, slightly lower than that encountered in never-vaccinated persons in the same outbreak. So in other words, vaccination did not prevent against infection or complications. So they, too, develop a mild, less pox-stop version of that disease. So it's chickenpox people. So they still got the disease. So the chickenpox vaccine did not prevent the chickenpox. And the mumps vaccine does not prevent the mumps. And they say here, in other words, despite the apparent vaccine failures, the breakthrough cases actually are a ringing endorsement for vaccination. The relative infrequency of failure, mumps used to cause tens of thousands of cases a year, whereas now it's considered news when a college has a few dozen cases, shows dramatic benefit from the population in general. Whereas for the poor guy who actually catches the disease despite vaccine, well, the infection is kinder and gentler and the recovery decidedly less arduous. Now, again, the unvaccinated guy who catches the disease doesn't seem to fare much differently from the vaccinated guy. So the mumps news from New Jersey should be further evidence that America ought to swallow its pride. We'll talk more when we get back.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com.
This is Dr. Bill Deagle of the NutriMedical Report, 12 to 3, Monday to Friday. Call-ins are welcome to the show. You can order at 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com.
Welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, so we're taking a look here at this mumps situation. So the Daily Beast is telling us that the resurgence of mumps outbreaks is an indication that the vaccine works. So the mumps news from New Jersey should be further evidence that Americans ought to swallow its pride, ignore its strident anti-vaccine rabble-rouser contingent, and join up with mighty Croatia, to require that vaccination become as certain as death and taxes. I think in the case where you have a non-deadly disease in an industry that is responsible for the death of at least 880,000 Americans a year, that there is no legal or moral or ethical authority to recommend treatment at any point for any condition which is not deadly. One thing to take a look at is, if you take a look at mumps, it was very high prior to 1987. Then it kind of fell down and down and down in 2002, almost went away. And then in 2003, 2004, we have a spike. And again, we have these spikes despite the high vaccine rate. So there's not any evidence that this vaccine's effective, that getting the vaccine in any way diminished the prevalence of mumps. The vaccine's been licensed since 1969, and we've been having outbreaks coming and going ever since. So this is a situation where the mumps went down, it went up, vaccine was instituted, it went down, and then, you know, it's just been kind of bouncing around ever since. But yeah, you have to take a look at this as far as, you know, what's going on here. So looking at the numbers then, just no statistical support for vaccine effectiveness. And now that the vaccine is at 97% uptake, and there are outbreaks in populations 97% vaccinated, and even vaccinated twice, there can be no case made for vaccinating any further. But knowing that these situations are spread by fomites, we can make a decision for cleanliness. More when we get back.
I saw you there, just standing there. And I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you, so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.